Ave, and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a Roman history podcast from La Trobe University. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me today is Dr. Emma Southen, historian and author of A Fatal Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. This is episode CLXXIII, Arminius. There were few enemies of the Romans who had as much success as Arminius. One of the Germani who fought at their side, he was able to unite the disparate tribes, lure three Roman legions into a trap, and defeat them at the Battle of Teutoburg Forest. His success and later resistance would leave the area largely free of Roman influence. Here's Emma Southen.
Arminius is a member of the Cherusci royal family, who are a Germanic tribe in Germany, who were originally kind of allied with the Romans when the Romans first entered Germany. And Arminius joins the Roman army along with his brother, is given this Roman name, Arminius, because the Romans don't call anybody by their name, they Latinize them, and fights alongside them for a couple of years, from about 6 to 9 CE, and then gets quite friendly with the general over there, his name is Quinctilius Varius, and then betrays him, turns against him, having learned a lot of good Roman tricks, and goes on to slaughter the three Roman legions in the infamous Battle of the Teutoburg Forest, killing Quinctilius Varius, eliminating three legions worth of men, and causing Augustus to spend a couple of months banging his head against the wall, screaming, "Quinctilius Varius, give me back my legions." At which point he then becomes a massive thorn in the side of the Romans. That battle really eliminates the Roman presence in a large swathe of Germany and pushes the border of the empire right the way back to the Rhine and prevents them from being able to push ever again too far into Germany, and keeps Germany free in his view and keeps Germany barbaric in the view of the Romans.
So it's quite a setback for the Romans, and this is really one of the big successes that you point to that another leader has over Rome, isn't it?
It is. It is the biggest loss that they really have in a very long time. Even when Crassus is being beheaded in Persia, is probably the only kind of closest loss, but even he doesn't lose three legions worth that are completely wiped off the map, and three eagles is a big loss, and it loses territory that they have gained. Like, they have been marching into it, they have been laying down camps, they have been building altars, they have been attempting to colonize this part of Germany, and it is a huge loss for them. It is the one and only time, really, that Augustus experiences a loss, which is why he handles it so poorly. And it is something that they're not used to at all, which is why Arminius becomes this kind of almost like a boogeyman to them. Tacitus writes about him the most because he writes a lot about the Germans. He's fascinated by them in a strange sort of way. The Battle of Teutoburg Forest becomes a kind of almost apocalyptic event in the Roman imagination. Like, when they're talking about it as the years pass, they never forget it, and it always is remembered as something cataclysmic that happened to the Roman Empire.
Okay, so you mentioned that Tacitus writes about it, and that's one of the main sources that we've got for when we're talking about Arminius and the story of this battle, but what other sources have we got available as well?
We have a contemporary source. We have Velius Paterculus, who is around at the time, and he gives a very brief overview of Arminius's life. He calls him smarter than the rest of his race, which is nice. But because Germans are a race born to be liars, it's not surprising that he eventually turned on them. And so he gives this kind of this general overview of Arminius's life as someone who joined the army, was originally an ally, and then turned against him. We also have later sources who are drawing off of them. Florus and Dio gives quite a good account of the actual battle. Everybody else will talk about the aftermath of the battle or a very vague description, but Dio gives us a good overview of how long the battle lasted and what kind of things happened. But Arminius is quite a big character in Tacitus's telling of Germanicus's time in Germany. Germanicus was sent by Tiberius to get revenge, basically, and to punch as many Germans in the face as he could until they were very sorry indeed for being mean to the poor Romans who were just there trying to colonize them.
You make it sound so innocent.
All they were trying to do was eradicate the culture and build a load of temples and ideally get them all drinking wine and joining in the gladiatorial games. And what they got instead was massacred. Rude.
Yes. Well, who wouldn't want a nice drop of Roman wine, though? That's right. Caesar complains about them like only drinking beer or something like that.
He does.
So what do we know then about the early life of Arminius before this battle, before he betrayed? I don't even know if he betrayed the Romans. That's a weird way to put it, but
we don't know a lot about his early life other than that he is a Cherusci. He's an elite member of that tribe. He is the son of Sigemar, who is kind of a leader of the Cherusci, and he and his brother are allied and join the Roman army. And he's young when this happens. When he dies, he's 36 or 37. So he joins the army young. Very quickly, him and his brother are given equestrian status, which is quite impressive, and fight in the Illyrician Wars, become very friendly with a member of the inner circle of Varus, who is leading the German troops at the time. So he is a young man who it seems that they are taking under their wing. And this is kind of how the Romans win hearts and minds in places that they are colonizing, which is that they take in children of elite members and give them a career and make it so that they feel part of the Roman world. So they're not being excluded or eradicated. They don't lose any power. They are brought in and are given position within the new power structure in their area.
So would they have been hostages then? Is that the sort of thing that I should be taking away?
Not really hostages. They are there voluntarily. You know, it's a kind of, would you like to come and join the army? Here's what you get for joining the army. It's pretty good. They are invited in and given benefits for being part of it. What you get if you don't join in is massacred by the Romans. So it's so it's a bit of an easy choice for a lot of people to make. And his brother very much makes that choice. He joins the army. He fights alongside the Romans for pretty much the rest of his life. And then he goes to Rome and lives a happy life in Rome as a member of a barbarian elite, basically. But Arminius either regrets his decision or never really gave his heart over to the Romans, because he turns out to have been working on a plan to turn on them and to join a coalition of Germanic troops who mostly have spent their entire history up to this point fighting each other. But the Romans coming joins them together as a common enemy that they can all agree that they don't like at all.
At this point, Arminius is back in Germania, and I assume that he's kind of part of Varus's troops.
Yeah.
They generally keep the barbarians together in their own unit, don't they?
So he's an auxiliary troop, yeah.
Yeah. So there'll be a group of Germani, and they'll be the Germani auxiliary barbarians.
Exactly.
So what is Germania like at this time? You said there's a lot of different tribes. There seems to be a lot of squabbles and very little unity. But Arminius is able to turn that around a bit.
Yeah, it's not a country. It's not a place that has like one king or one centralized elite. It is a tribal space where there are lots of towns and villages of people who consider themselves to be their own race, basically. So you've got the Cherusci and the Chatti and the Marsi and the Suebi and so on and so forth. And they're not necessarily all friends with each other, but the coming of the Romans joins them together in a way that they had not previously. It suddenly gave them a common identity. The Romans kind of imposed upon them, which they were forced to embrace in order to keep the Romans out, basically. And Arminius is apparently quite good at drawing this out and giving a rousing speech about freedom and liberty and not being enslaved by the Romans, which Tacitus writes a lot of them, obviously makes them up. His version of Arminius gives a lot of rousing speeches about not giving into slavery and not being subjugated by the Romans, and the tribes all coming together in order to maintain their freedom.
Mm. Okay, so Rome has a bunch of legions in the area, but much of them are moved over to the Balkans to deal with a rebellion. So Varus has 3 legions plus, you know, a few extra soldiers, which is, the numbers that I've seen are about 20,000 men in the area.
Which sounds like a lot, but is maybe a third or a quarter of what was normally there. It's a hugely depleted legion. Arminius takes advantage of this situation. The story that is told is that he starts fermenting all of the auxiliaries and the people that are sympathetic to the cause of kicking the Romans out to come together. It's often portrayed as a kind of national uprising, but there is no nation to rise up, basically. It begins as a military rebellion with the auxiliaries, basically. Mm. And he is talking about this, and Segestes, who is his father-in-law, who hates him. He sees the marriage of Arminius and Thusnelda as Arminius carrying his daughter off, and he hates Arminius for it. Whether Thusnelda was carried off against her will or whether she just married somebody without her father's permission is open to interpretation, but okay. He does not like Arminius at all and thinks he's a bit of a dick. So he tries to tell Varus that there is a rebellion fermenting against him and that he should lock up Arminius and he needs to do something about it. And Varus doesn't listen and says, "How dare you say something about this nice boy, Arminius? He's so young and sweet." Kind of doesn't take it very well. Arminius basically uses his position within the army to convince Varus to go into a forested area, which is an area that the Romans mostly avoid. They don't like the German landscape very much at all, but they don't like forests. He convinces him to go in there by telling him that he will bring more auxiliary troops that will help out, and they're going to go and deal with some discontent which is happening with the Suebi tribe. This is all Tacitus's version. He says to Varus, "I'll be back in a minute. I'm just going to go and get my other friends who I said were going to come and join us. They're definitely going to help out." And so Varus says, okay, he goes off with a little contingent of Roman army, meets up with all of these other tribes and members of the Cherusci and all of these people who he has got together, turn around and immediately kill all of the Romans that came with them and kind of rear up as actually an enemy who are going to slaughter all of the Romans instead while they're attempting to make their way through the forest. Which is an extremely cool description of the rebellion, because Tacitus is really good at very, very cool descriptions. whether it happened like that is a different matter, but it doesn't really matter because it sounds really cool. And then there is this terrible battle, which is portrayed by everybody as basically a slaughter of these Roman troops who were unprepared and were caught by surprise and were hemmed in, could not get into their normal formations, could not defend themselves properly, and so were caught on the back foot and were massacred effectively. Mm. Dio says that the battle lasts for about 3 or 4 days. Everybody else is a bit less clear on how long it goes on for, but it is a nasty battle and a lot of people die and 3 eagles are captured.
Let's unpack some of that, because I don't know if this is a thing, but my understanding is that there isn't actually a forest and that Teutoburg forest is like a strange translation mistake.
There are definitely forests around and trees, because later we find a lot of skulls nailed to trees, but it's marshy and it's difficult terrain that they cannot really deal with very well.
All right, so difficult terrain. And my other understanding from actually reading Caesar's Gallic War recently is that the Gauls had a habit of ambushing and that the Germani were very much fans of that kind of warfare as well. Like, it sounds like, you know, I will jump out from behind a tree waving a sword. It's not like a pitched battle that the Romans are good at.
Yeah, exactly. If they don't really draw up and say today is the day we're going to have a battle, they're much more likely to kind of all of a sudden appear So the Romans don't get the chance to build the defensive mechanisms that they are good at and pull up into their formations and have a strategy. They are quite often thrown into. Much later, there's a really good bit where Germanicus is chasing Arminius across Germany, and they think that they're going to have a battle, but just all of a sudden Arminius turns around and starts coming at them. Previously, they had been watching them go in one direction, and now all of a sudden they were watching all of these troops come at them, which completely caught them by surprise, and they did not know what to do with themselves. And yeah, it took them a long time to work out how to deal with being ambushed, which is to have scouts.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, you know, you've got to have scouts that you trust as well, because usually the scouts are locals. And when the locals are your problem.
Yeah. It is a nasty battle. Tacitus's description of Germanicus, who much later finds the location of the battle and describes finding the remnants of a camp that had not been properly built. And he says, you can see where the bodies had fallen while they were trying to run, and some had fallen hiding behind a hastily built defensive wall, and some had been shot while they were just standing firm. And you could see where they had then taken all of the heads and nailed them. And he has this really grim description of both the area as being dark and marshy and wet and horrible and almost kind of Grimm's fairy tale, like creepy place that Germanicus comes across, full of death. And one of the few descriptions of the aftermath of battle, of the bodies left lying, and then where they had put up gibbets to execute the survivors, and where they had put up an altar to what Tacitus considers to be profaning the site of the Romans, and they had given prayers to their non-Roman gods and that kind of thing, and insulted the bodies of the Romans. Tiberius allegedly did not like that Germanicus found this site, because he thought it was bad for soldiers' morale to see what the aftermath of battle looks like. But it is a very affecting piece of writing.
Sorry, just jumping back. So what happened to Varus in this battle?
Varus is pinned back, and when it is clear that all has been lost, he takes his own life. He falls on his own sword. He takes the honourable way out rather than allowing himself to be killed by the enemy, basically. And other members of his family take themselves with him. And then his body is taken by Arminius and is defiled.
Yeah, that's right. He cuts off the head and offers it to another chief to make an alliance.
Yeah.
But that other guy is kind of a bit...
He wants to be in with the Romans, so he sends it to the Romans.
I was about to say, he's a bit grossed out at the thing and sends the head back to Rome as a kind of peace offering. But Varus is the one who's copping the blame. And I guess in a lot of the accounts that we've got, it's Varus's negligence that gives Arminius this victory. Arminius doesn't get it because he's a great warrior, although I do get that he's a good warrior and a good fighter and he's got strategy. But it's Varus's failings that
It's Varus being too trusting, and Varus being a weak leader who fails to be properly prepared. And there are some descriptions which describe him, which are very mean about him, which Florus, I think, says that he's a very cruel and very tyrannical leader, and his troops don't even like him, and therefore that's part of why he is so bad as a leader. But for the most part, the Roman tradition, and you know, this is why Augustus is shouting, Quinctilius Varus, give me back my legions, not Arminius, give me back my legions. From his perspective, it is Varus who has failed, not Arminius who has succeeded.
Yeah. You mentioned that the eagles were stolen. So one eagle per legion is the kind of thing. And those being stolen are a big deal. It's a trophy kind of thing, isn't it?
It's a trophy, and they are considered to be sacred objects by the Romans. Like, when they're in their camps, they are kept by an altar. They are considered to be almost the soul of the legion, and they are kept in really religious surroundings, and protecting the eagle is the same as protecting a living thing, but a divine thing. And losing an eagle is not just a shame, but like a sacrilege. It is a real disaster in a very spiritual and personal sense, it is a real disaster.
So when Augustus dies, Tiberius becomes emperor. Tiberius sends Germanicus to Germania, and his main thing is kind of subjugate the region,
yep.
establish a bit of peace, remind everyone that Romans are still a thing, and yep. P.S. recover the eagles.
Yeah, and do as much to establish Roman power in the region and show that you can't just kick the Romans out. Like, they're not going to back down just because you murdered three legions. They're going to come back and come back hard, basically. And also, he does a lot of it because his initial interactions with the German troops are not good. They are rebelling. He's there when Tiberius becomes emperor and two legions mutiny against him, and he doesn't deal with it very well. And so once he is able to put down the mutiny, he then takes them across the Rhine and starts moving into Germany to give them something to distract them, basically. So he has some fairly pragmatic reasons for doing it as well. And he likes to burn a village every so often in order to show the Germans who's boss and to give his men something to do. Once he starts interacting with Arminius, he seems to become kind of hell-bent on chasing him across Germany and trying to capture back as much as he possibly can of what was lost. And he manages to reclaim two of the standards, and he fights Arminius a good couple of times in which he mostly gets the upper hand. When he gets Arminius in battle, like in a pitched battle, he is far more successful than when Arminius suddenly turns around and comes at him and ambushes him. And he also gets involved again with Arminius's father-in-law. This is where we get the kind of quite good family drama of Arminius, which is a bit obscure, but clearly something fun was going on. So once the Romans had left, Arminius and Segestes, his father-in-law, then just started fighting, basically. At some point, Arminius had kind of stopped being with his wife, who was pregnant, and she had ended up with her father at the time when he is being kind of besieged or surrounded by Arminius and his allies, and he calls the Romans for help, and they appear and extract out Segestes and his children, including Sisnelda, who is not there on her own accord. She seems to be there by force. Tacitus says that Segestes says that he asks for pardon for his children because both of them had joined Arminius. His son and his daughter had both gone off with Arminius. And he says, admittedly, my daughter is here by force. I forced her to be here, but if you could forgive her anyway, that would be great. So it appears that he has kind of kidnapped his daughter back. His son had run off with Arminius and then had changed his mind and come back and joined the Romans again. So there's like this massive family drama happening in the Cherusci. I imagine a lot of really awkward dinners and like, you can't tell me what to do. I'm a grown-up kind of screaming. Which Tacitus is not that interested in writing about, annoyingly, because the Romans weren't involved. But I feel like there's a lot of good conflict going on there.
But it's kind of like, you know, do the Germans really need to be worrying about this sort of stuff at the moment? To be fighting amongst themselves when they've got the Romans at their doorstep?
Can we not just...
Can we talk about this later?
Yeah. Segestes is very much a fan of the Romans, and he constantly is saying, look, I'm your friend, please be nice to me. I didn't run off with them. Yes, my children did, but I didn't. Basically, they give him some protection. They take him in. His daughter, Thisnelda, and the son that she is carrying, Arminius's son, are taken to Ravenna, where they are kept. And Tacitus says, there's some drama there, and we'll get to it later. And then that bit is missing, which is heartbreaking.
That's so frustrating. I've got in my
so
notes
annoying.
Here. What does this mean?
And no one else wrote about it. Lots of other people write about the battle. Lots of other people write about the things that were going down in very vague terms. But Tacitus is by far the most detailed on what is going on amongst the German tribes and what is going on with Arminius, because he kind of likes him, I think. So he's the only person who mentions this in all of surviving Roman literature. And then presumably it happens during the reign of Caligula, which is the big missing chunk of Tacitus. So we never know what happens.
So it says, Arminius's wife gave birth to a male child who was brought up in Ravenna. The humiliation which he had to suffer later are reserved for the proper place.
Yeah.
So a humiliation.
Who knows?
Interesting.
But then we know that he's dead by the reign of Nero, because what happens is the Cherusci keep fighting each other. They get embroiled in some kind of massive internal feud where they presumably keep killing each other, because by the reign of Nero, there's no one left to be the chief except a nephew of Arminius's. So Arminius's brother's son, who was born in Rome and brought up in Rome, and Nero sends him to be the chief of the Cherusci.
Right. So the thinking is that since that guy was sent to not Arminius's son, that Arminius's son wasn't around anymore. Okay.
Exactly. So otherwise he probably would have sent Arminius's son.
Mm.
So we kind of assume that he's dead by that point, or that something has occurred. We'll never know what happened.
Yes, we will. It's in a monastery somewhere. We'll find it.
I hope so. There's an Italian monastery somewhere, or a French monastery with a crumbling thing that's hidden behind a wall.
That's right. So Arminius, violent enough by nature, was driven frantic by the seizure of his wife and the subjugation to slavery of his unborn child. So that's from Tacitus.
Yep. He takes it very badly. He considers virtually any interaction with the Romans to be slavery, and he is furious that they have taken his wife and son, regardless of whether she went voluntarily or not. So he riles up his own tribe and also his kind of allied tribes and gets them to turn around against the Romans, including his uncle, who had been previously a kind of ally. He gets him on board and it's like, he took my son, how dare they? They start marching again, which means that the Romans send in another 40 cohorts and they start an epic chase across Germany, basically, of back and forth, and they keep confronting each other. And there's a really great battle where Arminius is seen covered in his own blood, throwing himself against the archers, is what Tacitus says, completely fighting to the death, essentially. and he only manages to escape this battle because he is let through by the Cherusci auxiliaries in the Roman army, who recognize him and let him out. But this is like a great battle just near the Weser River. I'm a big fan of Tacitus's set pieces, as you might be able to tell, but it's a great Tacitus set piece. And it opens with Arminius meeting his brother again for the first time since he had left the Roman army. His brother at this point has been fighting with the Romans all over the place, and they meet on opposite sides of the river. And during that time, Flavius, the brother, has lost his eye. And Arminius says, what happened to you? And he says, oh, I lost it while I was fighting. And he says, and what did they give you for that? Flavius kind of outlines the honours that he got as a Roman soldier. And he says, that is a low price for slavery. And then they get into a big argument. You're a traitor to your kind, and you have given up the sacred call of your hearth, and you are betraying your kindred to the oppressors. And then Flavius saying, no, the Romans are good and they bring peace. And then they all get into a fist fight and have to be separated before they kill each other, which is also a really good build up to the battle, which the Romans basically win. Arminius manages to get away just about without a wound, despite being covered in his own blood. Then it becomes a bit more complicated because Maribodus, who is the guy that Arminius sent the head to, suddenly starts getting involved. He's with the Suebi, and he picks a fight with Arminius. And it's a bad time to pick a fight with Arminius because he's just lost a battle, and accuses him basically of being a bad fighter and says, you might have killed three legions, but they were rubbish legions.
They were just small legions.
And you didn't do it like with any great genius. You just did it because they were even more rubbish than you.
Yeah. Oh, so he agrees with Tacitus. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. And he says, I fought the Romans, and admittedly I didn't kill any legions, but I didn't embarrass myself, and I held my own in pitched battle, blah, blah, blah. So Arminius turns around and says, oh yeah, you think you're hard enough? You want a bit of this? I'll give you a bit of this. So he has to ring the Romans for help and say, remember how I fought you in war? I'm really sorry about that. Will you come and help me again? And this forces the Romans to come back, this time led by Drusus, and start fighting Arminius again and push him back into fighting his own people, basically.
It's that pretty much does him in, because there was one passage that I read where Tiberius is offered, we can take Arminius out by poisoning him.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, his own people offering Tiberius this. And even Tiberius, you know, I'm going to say something nice about Tiberius here. Even Tiberius goes, no, look, that is too underhanded. We are not doing that. You know, we are Romans. We do things in a pitched battle kind of thing.
Which obviously Tacitus thinks is a big old lie. But yeah, so it's the Chatti who write to him and say, oh, if you want, we can poison him. And this letter is read out in the Senate, and then Tiberius says, no, we don't do that kind of thing. We beat people in battle. He has also recalled Germanicus out of Germany, which is why Germanicus never gets to have really a kind of final showdown with Arminius, which feels like it would be narratively satisfying at the very least. But Tiberius becomes tired of the war there, which is not really achieving anything. I'm going to defend Tiberius now. So Tacitus's version of events is that Tiberius is jealous of Germanicus's great successes and his brilliance at war, and thinks that he will be too successful and will threaten him. So he brings him back under the pretext that he needs him to go somewhere else. But the war is not really achieving much in the way of actual benefits for Rome. There's nothing there beyond just having territory that is quite difficult. They are losing a lot. Like, every battle is a nightmare, and every battle is losing a lot of men, and there are a couple of big old disasters. Germanicus gets caught in a storm at one point and loses loads of people to shipwrecks, and every battle is losing a lot of people, and they've been drawing off of the Gauls, who are providing all of the money through taxation and the supplies for this war, who are getting quite fed up of it. Tiberius has no real interest in expanding the empire, and claims that he was told by Augustus not to expand the empire. So he's like, look, this is over. I'm bored of it now. You have to come back to Rome.
And after all of that, it's not even the Romans that do Arminius in. It's pretty much infighting, squabbling, and his own people.
Is his own people. He seems to have tried to declare himself a king in some way, whether that means he tried to unite all of the people that he had been leading and be the king of all of them, or whether it means that he tried to take the position of somebody within the Cherusci is kind of unclear. But he basically is killed by his own people at the age of 37 because they thought that he was getting too big for his own boots.
They don't really go east of the Rhine anymore. They don't establish colonies.
His legacy really is that he does keep the Romans out of Germania and that whole area for a very long time. They never really go back. He's described by Tacitus as the liberator of Germany, because Tacitus likes to criticize empire a lot. And he also considers the Germans to be poor form to execute, to have killed him, basically. He then kind of disappears in a lot of Roman thought beyond the odd mention outside of Tacitus as the leader of the battle. He's not like the great boogeyman who's going to come and get you. Germany remains a place which is full of dark barbarians and horrible forests and oddball behaviours that they like to talk about. But because the story that they tell themselves is it was Varus's failure rather than Arminius's success, he does not become like a great remembered enemy. They don't like to remember their enemies for obvious reason. although interestingly, this is one of the very few times in world history where the winner is remembered by the losers, basically. But he kind of disappears until you get to the rediscovery of Tacitus in the 14th, 15th century. And the people of Germany think that what is being described is brilliant. And then as you enter the 19th century and the emergence of German national identity, Arminius becomes a huge symbol of German unity, of German national greatness and of freedom, and becomes very much a demonstration of the idea that the concept of Germany and of Germanic identity has always existed, and therefore it is a legitimate thing which exists now in the 19th century, as they are unifying Germany really for the first time, developing the concept of German and Germany. He's known as Hermann.
I think that's a translation thing, but
yeah,
I had heard of Hermann the German before, and I thought it was just kind of a slander slang kind of thing for a German person. I hadn't realized that there was actually somebody that was based on.
If you ask Germans, then he is a great national hero. Some problematic degrees, because he is hailed as, you know, the great hero who kept Germany free. And that is something that can be turned to problematic ideologies.
To the point, though, that when it was the 2000th anniversary of the Battle of Teutoburg Forest, I guess 2009, it was quite a low key. I mean, how do you celebrate huge battle / massacre? But it was quite a low key kind of commemoration / celebration.
Yeah, it's a hard one to balance, and because on the one hand you're like, well, they've kept the Romans out of Germany, but also at the same time that we did massacre a lot of people.
Did massacre 20,000 people.
It's tough to sell that these days as a good thing. It's not something that people appreciate.
That's Dr. Emma Southen, historian and author of A Fatal Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, and you have been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your local friendly neighbourhood podcatching service. Please leave a review, they are always very appreciated. Also available where all good podcasts are is Emma Southen's podcast History is Sexy. I am a faithful listener and I highly recommend it. You can like the Emperors of Rome on our Facebook page, and you can follow both of us on Twitter. Emma is at Nuclear Teeth, I am at Nightlight Guy, and the podcast is at Rome Podcast. That's it today for Emperors of Rome. In the next episode, Boudicca. But until then, I'm Matt Smith. You've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.